And it's the world-famous Phil Henry Show from the El Pacifico here on this Monday night, and it's good to be with you. There's radio, and then there is the Phil Henry Show. Increasingly, we lead the way as one might who has point on a dangerous patrol, a dangerous mission. Will we come back with the ears of our enemies tied about our waist as so much ornamentation, or will we suddenly be never heard from again? I don't know. It's not for me to say. Anyway, that was pretty, and I ad-libbed all of that.
I was going to say, did you write that down?
No, I completely ad-libbed all of it. It didn't mean anything, but...
Well, it means a lot in terms of the courage and everything.
Oh, it's a radio show. Don't get all excited about courage. What does...
Well, you know, we were talking about this before I went on the air. And, by the way, welcome, folks. We do have some things we want to get into. One of them was the capture of a terrorist. We're going to have Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police on to talk with us, not because Jay is necessarily an expert, but when it comes to terror or security experts, he's about all we can dig up at this hour.
Hey.
Thank you.
Well, don't let him hear that.
Well, Jay knows how I feel. Jay knows I love him. Jay knows I love him and that I consider him to be inept. Anyway, so we were discussing just before we climbed into this cockpit that we call the Airbus of magnificence that is the Phil Henry Show, and we were talking about... talk show hosts now are doing this prognostication. It isn't really that they're not really fortune tellers, but they are now saying, well, you know, the end is nigh. And it isn't just the province any longer, say, of art. You know, art sort of pioneered that. And there's always the originals, and then there's always the guys that are coming along behind trying to lick up the gravy that fell off the tray. I mean, you've got Art Bell, and then you've got Alex Jones, okay? You've got Howard Stern, and then you've got just about every talk show that does a morning show. You've got me, and then you've got...
No one.
Exactly. So,
Yeah, that's only because you don't know how to do the thing that you do.
Thank you, bud. It's very nice of you to say, but nonetheless, And you've got Art Bell, and as I mentioned, you've got Alex Jones and others, and these guys are all predicting the end of the world, and they're predicting the end of this, and they're predicting the end of that, and they're saying that if you look at history, why history teaches. Let me explain something, folks. History is a much tougher topic than just glancing at a date on a timeline and saying, see, Rome ended, and they were an empire. Why, America's going to do the same thing. It doesn't work like that. You have to understand what the nature of each society is, see? So if you say that Rome ended and America's going to end the same way as Rome because America is kind of an empire and Rome, you know, is kind of an empire, and that's the same thing. And see? And look? And see? Okay? And that, no, it doesn't work like that at all.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. How does it work then? Rome was...
Well, first of all...
No, hold on. Rome was the most powerful nation on Earth at its time.
Yes, but therein it ends the comparison. Rome was an empire in the strictest sense of the term. It was an autocracy run by an emperor, and as we all know, the least efficient way to run a country, if you want options and you want ideas and you want to be flexible as a society, you want to know how many different ways you can go. The least the successful form of government is a dictatorship or an autocracy because it does not abide multiple opinions. Rome was also a society that was steeped in lots and lots of superstition as opposed to the very clear separation of law and religion that we have in our society. Rome was guided by the superstition of priests in many instances, depending upon the emperor that was ruling at the time.
Yeah, you said about a republic and everything. What about the fact Rome was a republic?
Rome hadn't been a republic for hundreds of years, man, when they finally went down to crapper. They had not been a republic since Julius Caesar marched on the capital city there in the years just prior to the birth of Jesus. You ever heard that term, Rubicon?
The what?
Have you ever heard the term crossing the Rubicon?
Well, yeah, it's the river.
Yes, it is a river, right. Have you ever heard the term, he crossed his Rubicon?
What do you mean he crossed his Rubicon?
Is it a desert or is it a river, Phil?
Are you being funny or something?
No, you said he crossed his Rubicon. What is that?
It's a saying. See, what happened was Julius Caesar had his troops lined up in northern Italy, and the minute they crossed the Rubicon to head south to Rome, he knew he had committed an act that he could not turn back on. He knew that he had crossed... He didn't think I'm crossing the Rubicon, but that was the river that they crossed, and...
Were they not able to get back across it?
Yeah, they have a bridge.
Why don't you guys just listen to the poetry of the thing, man? Forget about whether they had a bridge or they could get back. He crossed the Rubicon. It was a major river, yeah. And he was sending down south into Italy thousands of troops. It was not an operation that he was going to easily turn back. So when Caesar crossed the Rubicon, that has become a saying for you cannot turn back now. If you cross your Rubicon, you cannot turn back. You are committed. See? So there you go.
Well, I don't know anything about that. I think, Phil, that you, when you bring those examples up, it makes me, and I'm an educated woman, I have a college degree, and it makes me look a little bit like I eat with my hands. So I would prefer that you be a little bit more direct.
Yeah, on a dessert.
No.
Well, you're the one that asked, is it a dessert?
You said he crossed his. So I'm thinking there was ownership there.
Yeah, well, there was ownership there. It was Caesar crossing his Rubicon. All I'm trying to say here is, if you want to predict the end because, oh, gee, I read that Rome went this way. Gosh. You know, one of the dumbest things that people do these days, you want to laugh until you vomit, is that everybody's a brain surgeon when it comes to history. All you got to do is, well, look what happened to Hitler. Why, the same thing's happening now. No, man. You know, history is not like reading a cereal box. That's not how easy it is, and that's not how you get information. That's not how you understand history. You got to understand the societies that are involved, the events, the times, etc. Okay? The New York Times, the LA Times, and the Times. And Hitler and America, no, there's no comparison whatsoever. Anyone that says there is should be taken out and beaten with a tire iron. But the best thing, I guess, that we can hope for is that you just ignore them. Because those individuals, they think they're right, too. They're not dumbasses. They're not trying to manipulate the information. They honestly think they're right.
Well, now, who's saying that Hitler is what?
They were saying that America's turning into a fascist state.
Oh.
And that this is how the Nazis started. You got to be some kind of simple-minded gloid, man, to go down that road.
Well, they talk about Hitler. They're saying, like, fascism, stuff like that. Yeah, throwing everybody in jail.
They ain't throwing everybody in jail. Look, man, you know, you take a look at Germany when they were throwing everybody in jail, and you go ahead, and I dare you to make a comparison between the two societies. And don't give me this bullcrap about it. Well, it's secret now. No. We've already played that one. We've played all of that. We'd love to present the information and evidence, but they're hiding it. Now, nobody's buying that one anymore. So you're going to have to start coming up with some hard and fast facts. If you do that, then Phil here will listen. All right, Jay Santos is going to be with us here in a moment. A couple of things happening this past weekend. Navy SEALs aborted a Somalian raid because children were present. There was a raid in Libya, and they were able to apprehend as well a terrorist suspect, a guy who had been wanted since the bombing of the U.S. embassies in Africa. So that's obviously a long, long-standing warrant and effort at getting that guy. And we're going to talk with Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police about that. And your phone calls, of course, at 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and join us online with our Phil TV videocast tonight. Yeah! All right, that's one of my very dear, close, personal friends, Eminem, and I thought I'd start the segment here with one of his fine songs, only because I hadn't gotten anything ready in terms of bumper music. Shut up, Eminem.
Well, why are you doing that?
I don't know whether he's going to say F or S or MF or, you know, I was surfing around looking for a bumper because we haven't yet. We're so lazy on this show, man, you know.
Dad, you speak for yourself. I said I'd do the bumper if you'd wanted it.
Yeah, I understand that, man, but I just don't have that stuff ready. So, yeah, no, I'm taking it upon myself. Before we get Jay Santos on here, I want to first of all take this opportunity to thank, from the bottom of my heart, Graham Elwood and the guys at the LA Podfest. That was so much fun. We did Bobby Dooley did an interview with Graham Elwood in front of a packed house. Well, it was packed eventually.
Yeah, it was a very late arriving crowd.
I don't think that late.
Well.
No, I'd say within 5 minutes the room filled up. Anyway, So Bobby Dooley did a great job. And then the Sklar brothers, you know Scarborough Country? To any of you guys listen to that podcast? It's very funny. And these cats have been around since the early NPR days. The Sklar brothers were actually on an NPR morning show. And then NPR decided to gut that morning show. It was a local morning show here in Southern California, I think over on KPCC. And, of course, radio programmers being the brain surgeons that they are, they decided, well, this is a really good show. It sounds funny. It's a kind of a non-traditional show. So let's destroy it and put Morning Edition back in there. And that's what they did, and their ratings went right through the floor. All right. Good job. Smart move, man. Gosh, you know, no wonder you cats do what you do and what I do, because what you do and what I do and I do what you do, and you did the what I did?
Phil, you're rubbing it in. I think they get it.
What is it? Why are program directors and radio executives so thin-skinned and such a bunch of lightweights that they can't take a little bit of crap? You know, especially now, man, the way they're butchering everything six ways to sunset. So anyway, the Sklar brothers were great. And then as we were leaving the event, we ran into a very nice man and his wife, Scott Ian, with Anthrax, and his wife, Pearl Adey. And they had been doing Christine Blackburn's Storyworthy podcast. Very nice guy, and Scott is, and Pearl, a nice lady, and we talked, we chatted, we exchanged gifts. You know, I gave him a little Fijian rug, and no, I'm kidding, I just...
You did?
No, I'm joking. Anyway, very nice people. If you go to our website on the homepage, it's a very casual shot of me and, you know, Scott and his wife, and we just look really cool. All right, so... Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police going to join us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Jay, I know that you wanted to hear... This is a very... It's a little embarrassing for me. You wanted to hear your theme music?
Well, I didn't want to... I said we used to use a theme music, Citizens Auxiliary Police theme music.
Right, exactly. We did not have it ready, and so I just wanted to launch into the interview with you.
I think I spoke with... Hi, Jay, it's Margaret.
Yeah, Mark, did you tell these guys? Did you get them up to speed?
I tried. I talked to Bud, and I talked earlier to David.
Well, wait. What do you mean, get us up to speed?
Well, I asked Mark to get you guys up to speed. I got to have, and I'm not trying to say nothing, but we do have our own theme music. We are a law enforcement agency, and, you know, it's about saving lives. We're the only one that I know of, Phil, that has a theme. And does a theme music, and I thought it would be nice if you people would just do what you would do, and have the theme music ready for us. I mean, if you don't.
Okay, we'll have your theme music ready for you. I don't know that you being a law enforcement agency and having theme music.
Yeah, right here, Mr. Santos, you want it?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it.
No, wait a minute, Bud. I was going to say, because of the... Who told you to hit that?
Miss Sales did.
All right, Sir Mantel.
I was going to say...
Phil, he's into the middle of his theme music.
Oh, well, he's in the middle of his theme music.
Do you mind? God.
Whenever the laws of any state are broken, a duly authorized organization swings into action.
Here comes the good part.
It may be called the state police, state troopers, militia, the rangers...
Or the citizens auxiliary police.
These are the stories of the men whose training, skill, and courage have enforced and...
That's all I want to hear.
So you cut the theme off at the end just so you could get in the... All right.
No, it's just the way that we want it to roll. You know, you ever heard of kids when they say something like, that's how I roll? Well, that's how I roll. You know?
That's how you what?
That's how I roll. Forget it.
Jay, by the way, Jay was at the PodFest. You were marvelous with Bobby Dooley.
Thank you very much. I was trying to do my best. The audience was laughing at me.
Well, the audience is going to laugh at you, Jay, but they also are informed by you, I'm sure.
Well, I just... It hurt.
Well, Jay, I think that was their way of endearing themselves to you and you to them.
Say again?
I said I think that was their way of endearing themselves to you and you to them.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I said...
You forget it. What is it with you, man?
I don't want you to be about endearing.
The audience is showing affection toward you. Okay, let's get into what it was we wanted to talk about here. Jay Santos with us. From the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Jay, over the weekend, Delta Commandos. I thought it was interesting that the Delta Force did indeed get the assignment to capture this particular terrorist. And we had heard, of course, comment following the bin Laden caper that the Delta Force had been, they'd been stepped over or they'd been passed over. But there they were, capturing Abu Anas al-Libi, a 49-year-old Libyan, and a guy that has been charged in the 1998 bombings of the U.S. embassies in Tanzania. Tell me a little bit about this operation, Jay.
Well, Phil, you're absolutely right. They did use the Delta Force. A lot of these guys are guys that I know personally. I've talked to them. I don't know them all that well, but we have run into each other. A lot of them, as you know, Phil, live in San Diego. All the SEALs do, because the Navy's down there for the Army, and most of them probably don't live in Kentucky and everything, but just pretend like they lived out here, and you can imagine I run into them in a supermarket or something. I'll say, you know, don't tell me anything you're doing, how you been, you know, I'll shake their hand, that's, you know, okay, don't say anything, and I'll just leave. And
what do you mean, pretend like they, do they live out here or don't they?
No, Delta Force would not live out here in California. Navy SEALs would, because of the United States Naval base, but Delta Force would most likely be back in Kentucky, wherever airborne is going to be. You know, that's probably where they're going to be.
But Margaret's question stands. What do you mean, pretend like they live here?
Well, just pretend they do live here. I do run into them, if you were to pretend that.
Let's say I'm not pretending that. Are you still running into them?
No, then I'm running into SEALs. God! I'm just trying to say, Phil.
So in other words, you're running into guys that are Special Forces guys, but the guys you're running into, how do you know they're SEALs?
I think you can tell pretty much by two, if they're wearing camo and they're ripped. If you see a guy that's buff, if you see a guy that's buff and in camo, and I don't know, you just know, you'll say hello to them.
In other words, you don't really know.
No, I don't really know, but I guess. But what I'm trying to say is,
well, how, what good is this doing us then, okay?
Hey, buddy, come on and do that.
Well, hold on. I can still talk about the operation and everything.
Well, you're giving me this line about how you've met Navy SEALs. Oh, how do you know? Well, because if they're ripped and they wear camo. I mean, maybe, you know.
Exactly, maybe. They're not going to walk up to you, Phil, and say, hi, I'm a Navy SEAL, I'm SEAL Team 6, anything you all know about everything I'm doing? They're not going to do that. Not going to do that. Forget it, Phil. It's not never going to happen, okay? Okay, Phil?
No, gee, I didn't know that, Jay. Thank you very much for helping. Of course I know that. What I want to find out from you is, okay, forget about that. What do you think of the operation?
Well, I think, first of all, if it had been me, I probably would have chosen a more of a direct... I know they were able to capture him, and what they did was they captured him using vehicles. The commanders converged in about three or four vehicles near the home of Al-Labi in Tripoli. His family talked to reporters that the commandos were wearing masks. They smashed the window, and they whisked him away. They put him into a car, and they whisked him away. Now, I don't think I'd do that, because that would cause a great deal of people on the street would go, hey, wait a second, wait, what's going on? You know, Phil, that would attract, you know, Phil, how it attract people?
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah, I do.
All right.
He's just trying to tell you, Phil.
Yeah, I know.
Well, what are you getting?
Go ahead.
All right, so they would converge, and I agree with that part of the plan. Smashing a window and dragging a guy out by his face or whatever, it sounds very sloppy to me. Sounds very sloppy. And
well, how do you know they dragged him out by his face?
Well, look, Phil, they busted a window, and they got him out, and they whisked him away. There's only one way that you're going to whisk a guy away.
What do you mean, whisk away? Are you talking about whisked?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They whisked.
All right, so they're sort of very rapidly departed with him.
Well, that is true. That's what they're claiming. But I don't see how you can do that. You're going to whisk a guy through a busted window. You're going to be dragging him across broken glass. They probably just cut him up bad, man. They probably threw him in the back and didn't even care. And said, are you Al-Labi? And he's, yeah. And just pulled him right through glass. Probably busted the glass using his head. And put him in the back of a Jeep and whisked away. I would think that that's sloppy. I would think that would leave a blood trail. That would not be the way that I'd do it. Now, let's take a look at the SEAL operation, because they were down in Somalia, and they were trying to get a terrorist down there in Somalia, and they had to abort because of kids. That's a tough call, and I certainly admire any military operator who is not going to proceed with operation if there are children that could be hurt. But, let's just get realistic here for a couple of seconds. This guy is a wanted terrorist.
So you'd kill the kids?
No, I didn't say that. I just said get realistic.
All right, hold on for a minute, Jay, because this is interesting. Jay Sam is talking with us about the Delta Force commando raid that was able to apprehend a terror suspect. In fact, a very key terror suspect, a guy that was involved in the bombing, allegedly in the bombing of the U.S. embassies in Africa in 1998. And then there was an aborted attempt at kidnapping a terror suspect in Somalia by the Navy SEALs over this past weekend as James Whale.
Yeah, as James Blue Whale.
As Blue Whale, yeah. This show blows whale. No, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police and more here. Don't forget philhendryshow.com, and also online right now is the download of our Pro Game of the Week from yesterday. Check it out. Oh, it's Monday. Welcome back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Go online at philhendryshow.com to get a backstage pass. We have, as I mentioned just before the break, we have the download of yesterday's game. The Pro Game of the Week is as it was broadcast by Steve Bozell and Ted Bell. Now, Margaret, I understand that Ted was rushed to the hospital.
Yes, Ted Bell was taken to the hospital with an asthma condition. This, by the way, after, and I'm almost embarrassed to mention this, but Ted was struck with an asthma attack. He was carried downstairs by Steve Bozell on... apparently Mr. Bozell's shoulder, Bud, is that right?
Yeah, he put him over his shoulder, then he ticked him out downstairs, then he laid him on the dirt.
He laid him on the dirt?
Yes, he laid him down on the ground and then went back upstairs to call the game. And Ted lay there in the noonday sun.
Just lay there waiting for an ambulance?
Yes, and kids walking over and leaning over and spilling ice cream on him. It was very... traumatic for him, so I don't know what he's going to say about that.
Well, I mean, my hands are clean on that one. I mean, that's an independent production.
Well, that's not what he's saying.
Well, okay, I can well imagine, Margaret. Tell you what, I'll talk to a lawyer about that.
Yes, I'm married to a lawyer.
That doesn't make any difference to me. I don't want to be talking, you know...
Well, why not?
Because when I talk to you about stuff, I get nervous, because you tend to make things sound... worse than they are.
I'm trying to tell you the lay of the land here, Phil.
You're not a lawyer, so thank you very much.
I'm married to one.
Just because you're married to one?
Yeah, just because I'm married to one, what?
Doesn't...
It doesn't mean you're one.
My husband is a lawyer.
Do you know how many times I've heard people say my husband or my wife is a lawyer, and that automatically makes him an expert? What is this with people? All they'll say, well, you know, oh, well, my father, my mother was in the military, so therefore what? You're what? You're General Charles de Gaulle or something? All of a sudden you're an expert?
Who's Charles de Gaulle?
Just a general, man.
Probably like George Washington.
Yeah, it's just like George Washington. So anyway, I don't necessarily, I'm not giving you, I'm not disrespecting you, Margaret, but I don't necessarily think that you are a lawyer.
Well, just because you've got a picture of yourself with Scott Ian of Anthrax on the homepage of your website doesn't make you a metalhead. Okay?
Yeah.
That doesn't insult you?
No, it doesn't insult me. What are you, an idiot?
Phil, watch it, okay? Watch it. Because these nails here, I stuck these...
Yeah, I know what she's going to say. Remember when Frank limped?
When Frank limped, I don't want to hear about anything, okay?
Well, that's...
Yeah, that's fine. And I don't like being threatened that way either.
I'm not threatening you.
All right, getting back here to our guest, it's Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, as we are talking with Jay here about, we're discussing with him the... what are we doing with this music now?
That's the theme music.
I know it's the theme. Does he got to do it every break?
Jay, do you want this every break?
Yeah, I do want to ever bring this around, at least for this time now.
Okay, well, here it is.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to hear it. You're talking. I can't hear it. You're talking.
Okay, it's playing.
Would you please shut up? You know?
And don't tell me to shut up, man.
I can't hear it when you talk.
You're the guy that's talking right now.
Or the highway patrol.
Aw, you dirty...
These are the stories of the...
Wait a minute. Turn this thing off. If you think I'm going to get in an argument with you, Mr. Sanis, about your theme music, you're not in entertainment. You're a law enforcement security agency, right?
That is correct, sir. But I'm supposed to say at a Citizens Auxiliary Police at a certain time, and you were gas-bagging me, And
I wasn't gas-bagging you, man. You told me to be quiet, and I said, okay, fine. And then you start saying, I can't hear what you're talking. You were doing most of the talking.
No, Phil, I think if you put a watch to it...
Well, I'm not going to put a watch to it. Play his theme, okay? Are you ready?
No, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. That was more a problem. Honey, do you mind, Mr. Henry?
Well, what do you want me to do here?
Just 2 seconds. Give me a... Okay, I'm going to ask my wife for something. Please don't laugh. Would you get me the chocolate milk that I bought? I asked you 3 times already. No, the chocolate milk. I don't want a Yoo-Hoo.
Oh, man, he's got to be kidding me.
Hold on, please. I don't want a Yoo-Hoo. Okay, my wife's just, you know...
She bringing your chocolate milk?
I don't think it's right for you to...
Phil, he was trying to keep that under wraps.
What is it with you all of a sudden protecting this guy?
I just didn't want to broadcast everybody. Thank you. Very refreshing.
That's nice.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Henry. I will not be laughed at.
Wait. Oh, man, you know.
Well, you laughed at him, Phil. You made him look like...
Yeah, you sort of did make him look like a big, boob, just a boob unchained.
A boob unchained, huh? Wouldn't you... That's your fondest dream, bud.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Boob unchained.
Bool?
In any event, Jay, if you call back, I apologize. I didn't mean to make a big thing out of it. I promise that I won't yell. Is that him?
Yeah, it's Jay. Yeah. He's back.
Yeah, I'd rather you not make fun of me and everything.
Okay, Jay, I'm not going to make fun of you. Let's play the Citizens Auxiliary Police theme. And here it is, okay?
Would you please? Thank you. It does take time. You gotta build up to it.
Yeah.
Whenever the laws of any state are broken, a duly authorized organization swings into action. It may be called the state police, state troopers, militia, the rangers,
or the citizens auxiliary police.
These are the stories of the men whose training.
I agree.
You might as well let the thing play.
No, we don't have no time, you know.
All right, so let's talk about the Somalia raid by the Navy SEALs. It's very interesting, kind of a big weekend for the special forces of the United States military. In one instance, this man is captured in Libya, the man that they feel was partially, if not entirely, responsible for the planning of the bombing of the embassies. In another instance, another high-value target, as they like to say, in Somalia. What happened to the Somalia operation?
My operation, Phil, is one that's a little bit easier to critique from a standpoint of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. My understanding is, and from the preliminary reports that I was getting, the SEALs came in low and they came in sweet. Now, I'm going to be using some military terms, and I'll try to explain them as I use them, but please, if you can imagine that this is classified and everything like that.
I understand.
The Navy SEALs came in low, they came in sweet. They made a very tight entry. They were able to slide in using a lubricant.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, would you... come on, man.
God, what'd you just do? Pound your hand on the table?
I was actually killing a fly.
What are you doing?
What are you doing, man? Slide in using a lubricant.
This is the third consecutive show where I've heard that word. If I hear that again, I'm leaving.
I'm sorry, Mr. Henry. I'm trying to use the Navy SEALs terms for their military operations.
Oh, come on, man. Are you telling me the Navy SEALs use terms like we went in tight and we went in loose and we used lubricant? That's what they're talking.
Yes, sir. That's the kind of thing that they use so that if you overhear them on a radio, you won't know what they're talking about. And it's always trying to say...
What is it with you crying all of a sudden, man? What, Robert?
Well, I'm sorry. He's been kind of emotional, you know.
Yeah, he has been emotional last few days.
Why?
I don't know, but he just has been.
I'm just feeling very emotional, that's all.
Boy, between you and Bozell, man, we got the biggest sniveling babies on this show. Go ahead.
God, that hurt.
I apologize. Go ahead.
So, the Navy SEALs come in on what are called speedboats that you blow up. You know the kind that inflate?
Uh-huh.
What?
On what are called speedboats that you... Go ahead.
Phil, would you let him finish?
Sorry.
They come in on speedboats that you blow up. You go to the gas station and you pump them full of air. they take the speedboats, and then they go in at what we call a sweet angle, okay? They eject themselves from a boat, then they go straight in for the compound area. Now, the compound area is where you're going to find most of your terrorisms, or terror suspect, I should say. Those guys live in compounds, if you're not aware of that, Mr. Henry. So when you see a compound, that's where he's going to, I mean, if you're looking for a terrorist, that's where he would be if you did, you know, go to the right place. So when they came in sweet and tight, and then they loosened up, or they loosened it up, then they were pretty much back door.
Can I just, you know, just interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
This is getting more vulgar and more vile. Are we going to be getting X-rated here?
Yes, that's a very good question.
I'm not sure I understand.
Yes, you understand. They went in sweet and tight, then it loosened up, and now they're going back door. What do you want me to tell you, man? You understand what I'm saying here.
Well, I understand, but I think most people are going to realize this is a military operation. Nobody's going to be getting all, ooh, wow, I'm getting all excited. We're talking about countering terrorism.
It isn't about... See, the law says that I can't be gratuitous, okay? Actually, the law doesn't say anything. There is absolutely no written law. But the FCC, whenever they get around to sitting down and thinking up some new way of screwing with my life and other broadcasters' lives, they came up with one which was gratuitous. You can't be gratuitous.
What does that mean?
It means just doing it for the sake of doing it.
No, I'm telling you that the Navy SEALs will use these operational terms... So if I could continue.
Go ahead.
So they come in tight, and they go back door, and then in missionary style, and then...
All right, so thank you very much.
Why'd you hang up?
Gratuitous? You're telling me that isn't gratuitous?
Well, I mean, them's the terms that they're going to use. They're not being gratuitous or anything.
Well, I think they are, okay? And on top of everything else, Jay doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. Why am I even talking to him? All right, folks, we're going to be right back here on the Phil Henry... What is this?
I got to block out with his theme.
You're killing another fly, Phil.
Go ahead, man.
Don't you think I'm entitled to have the theme music to walk out on?
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, I'll just shut up.
Whenever the laws of any state are broken, a duly authorized organization swings into action. It may be called the state police, state troopers...
Here comes Phil, and I'll get out of here. Or the Citizens Auxiliary Police.
These are the stories of the men whose training, skill, and courage have enforced and preserved our...
Great. All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, on the line with us. Coming up next, we'll have General Galen Shaw to give us a little bit more of a military view of this thing. We got a lot more news to get to tonight here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, a lot of football news, and I do want to get back into explaining what happened to Ted Bell yesterday as he had to leave the broadcast after an asthma attack. Woo! Hello! Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Really thinking about this bumper music, aren't we?
You know something, Phil? I remember when you never mentioned bumper music because to you that was the sign of a very weak show when you talked about bumper music. All you're doing...
Yeah, I do what's talking about it.
All right, so there. I won't talk about it then.
Well, I mean, you don't have to dump out of it, ma'am.
Just forget your bumper music, all right?
Yes, ma'am. Anyway, welcome back to the program, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Before I get into anything, though... Before I get into anything, we got to get Steve Bozell in here. You know, should we wait for Steve for the top of the hour? You know?
Yeah, I think you ought to, because you got a General Galen Shaw on a line.
Oh, my God. Do you want to go back and try that again, or do you just need more insulin shock? What is that?
Oh, wait a minute.
Phil, what did he just say?
I said we got General Galen Shaw hanging on one line.
General Galen Shaw hanging one line.
Hey, Margaret, the kid's nervous, okay? Take it easy. Electroshock.
I didn't say electroshock. I said insulin shock.
Which is worse?
I don't... Boy, look at you, the big expert.
In any event, General Galen Shaw is with us, but we are going to talk to Steve Bozell at the top of the hour because he and Ted Bell covered that Denver-Dallas game yesterday. What a ball game. I mean, what a football game. One for the ages, baby. One for the ages. One for the record books. On the line with me here is General Galen Shaw from Washington, D.C. General Shaw, two very big military operations yesterday, one of them successful. The Navy SEAL operation, not successful, or was it not successful?
Well,
Well, thank you very much for having me on your program, and that's a very good question. And I'm glad you asked that question, because the Navy SEAL operation was successful, although it did not succeed in apprehending the target that they had traveled to Somalia to apprehend. They did withdraw with great skill and precision. No members of the SEAL Team 6 were injured at all, and they also succeeded in their secondary objective, which was not to injure any children that they saw in the compound area. And it was at that time they made the decision to withdraw.
So the SEALs saw that there were children there, they decided to withdraw?
No, what initially happened was that they were seen by one of the security people in and around the compound, and a firefight ensued. They withdrew to the beach. The SEALs are very skilled at this. Just because you say they're in a firefight, to the SEALs, that's hardly breaking a sweat. They are very, very skilled. Obviously, they are expert shots. And so when you exchange fire with a Navy SEAL, you are automatically at a disadvantage. And I don't care how many soldiers or how many people there are, personnel there are, that they're going against. So the SEALs withdrew with skill and precision to the beach. And it was at that time that they huddled together, even with a rain of bullets coming down around them, and decided to rest, have some refreshment. They then reached into these MRIs they have, Phil, which are food packets.
Hold on for just a minute, because I'm losing you here. They're in a firefight.
That is correct, yes.
And they're getting...
hold on, because I know that this sounds unusual.
You see, they're getting shot out when they eat on a food?
That's exactly right, Rich. See, they are so skilled. These are SEALs, Phil. This is the Navy SEALs. Okay, so just throw everything out that you think you know about a soldier. They can go down to the edge of the beach as they did, break out their rations, have coffee, have dessert, smoke a cigarette, even as they are taking incoming fire to the tune of thousands of rounds a minute.
Now, how are they able to do that?
You just heard what I said, didn't you?
Phil, they are SEALs. They're Navy SEALs.
Well, that's just great that they're Navy SEALs. I mean, you're talking about guys... You're just saying to me...
Well, you just got to listen to me, Phil, and quit panicking, because this is the difference between you and I and a Navy SEAL. You are... Forgive me, Phil, I respect you greatly, but you're sitting there going, ooh, ooh, ooh. You sound like a little girl.
Look, General...
Oh, no, you do. You sound like a little girl. The Navy SEALs would never even want to be in a bar. They wouldn't want to be sitting within 50 yards of a guy like you. They would say... Please, give me my bill. I've got to get out of here. There's a guy down there getting all squirrely and squealy. And no, we can't do that. Now,
all right, I'm going to ask you some questions since it is my show, okay?
All right. You can pull out your little girl act if you want. And
I'm not pulling out a little girl act here, General. I'm asking you a very simple question. Are the Navy SEALs so skilled that they can sit and have a cigarette, eat dessert, make coffee, and contend with thousands of rounds of ammo?
What do you think I just got done saying?
Phil, what is he saying? Are you not listening to him?
I got done saying to you, yes. And that's what happened in Somalia. The SEALs decided this is a good place before we get back on our skiffs and go back to the base of operations, which would be some Navy ship, some operational ship off the shore of Somalia. And they decided at that time, after having a cigarette and dessert,
After having a cigarette and dessert. How do you know it was after having a cigarette and dessert?
Because that's generally the Navy. If you're doing it by the book, that's what the Navy requires of a SEAL.
Yeah, the probably Navy said before you make a decision, have a something on your stomach.
Oh, you guys are high on drugs. I'm never going to buy this.
Bill, I resent that.
I'm never going to buy this in a million years. As good as the SEALs are, I don't think they sat there, had dessert, smoked a cigarette, made coffee, and oh yeah, there's thousands of rounds coming in. Well, I think what we should do here is let's just break off the attack because there's kids.
That's exactly what happened. And you don't want to believe it? That's bad on you, friend. Fool me once, bad on me. Fool me twice, bad on you.
That is true, Phil.
Yeah, and I have never known what that meant. Okay, so, well, that's out of sight, General.
What do you mean it's out of sight? Are you pulling some of that hippie... If you go hippie on me, I've got a knee that is going to be buried in you, and it isn't going to be a place that necessarily has an opening for it, if you know what I mean. Phil, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you very much, General Shaw.
Well, don't go away, Matt. Just go away.
Thank you very much. General Shaw and the Navy SEALs broke off their attack in Somalia because of the presence of children. They could have engaged in a sustained firefight and eventually obtained their objective, if you will. Now, if this is SEAL Team 6, this is the same SEAL Team 6 that attacked Osama bin Laden. And the question that I have, and I wish I should have asked it of General Shaw, although he doesn't sound like he lives on the planet Earth with any of us.
Well, why do you say something insulting like that?
Because I don't believe what he's saying.
If he says that the Navy SEALs can do it, why don't you believe it?
I don't believe they're down there smoking cigarettes, making dessert, and shooting, you know, guns. I know they're good. But the question I wanted to ask was, are these the same guys?
Yeah, like the same guys that went on the Bin Laden raid. Yeah, it's SEAL Team 6.
Yeah, but how many guys are in SEAL Team 6, see? You see what I mean?
Oh, you're saying that this could have been a whole different group of people.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't know. I don't know. The last time SEAL Team 6 did anything that we knew about, it was indeed the Bin Laden raid. And that was 2 years ago, so maybe it was the same guys. I mean, that's not asking too much of guys to, you know, mount a heavy-ass raid every 2 years.
Well, I don't know. I think they may have wanted them to rest up.
Yeah, they want to rest up, probably.
Rest up. Well, I just got done saying, you're talking about every 2 years. Every 2 years, they're asking these guys to do something. Rest up?
Yeah, they probably won't rest up.
Wow. Anyway, congratulations, guys. You didn't get any children killed, and there will be another day. World-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. Check out the download of yesterday's show, man. We'll talk about it. Steve Bozell coming up. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Nice to have you with us, folks. And, anyway.
What's wrong?
Nothing. I would like things around here to be a little bit more proficient technically. Let me just put it to you as simply as I can.
Well, you can't get it. No one's gonna understand.
I'm just telling you, you know. I'm an old school guy, man. You know, I don't play this. I don't play that, man. I'm an old school guy. It's got to be tight. It's got to be right. It's got to be good. It's got to be sweet. In the words of the Navy SEALs, well lubed. Thank you. All right. Welcome back to our program. And Stephen Bozell, who found himself in a very interesting situation yesterday. Steve was on the air with Ted Bell. They were doing our pro game of the week. They were announcing the Denver and Dallas game. What a ball game it was. And all of a sudden, it was, I believe, Ted Bell who began to choke and gag and squeal and everything else. And next thing you know, he had a problem. And Ted had an asthma attack, and Steve had to take over, not only broadcasting the game, but at one point there, Steve, you also had to carry Ted downstairs?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went down, Phil. I had to, he started to gag up, and I went, what are you doing? And I thought he was kidding at first. And
do we have a tape recording of that, Bud?
I think I sent an MP3 to Bud to Dud Bickman or I'm sorry Dub Bickman and
Bud Dickman. You sent that to him?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got it right here.
Play that and let's hear it. This is when he was talking to you on the phone from the hospital, right?
Yes, sir.
That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all we got.
What was that, man?
It was something like his throat was constricted or something. Some got tight right up. And so when he was having a hard time breathing, I said, well, I've got to get you to an ambulance. So I picked him up and carried him down about two flights of stairs.
Why didn't you guys wait for an ambulance to bring a gurney up there?
Because I needed the room, and I knew I had to do the game, and I knew that I had to. I needed a room there in the press box. And Ted had collapsed in the chair, and I didn't want to lay him on the floor because at halftime, they bring in, I don't know if you're familiar, Phil, but they will generally cater in the sandwiches so you don't have to leave because you're doing the game. And if the girl came in with the sandwiches and the drinks, she'd trip over Ted.
Oh, I see. So in order to make it nice and cleared out for the sandwiches, you got to get Ted out of the booth.
Well,
Phil, I mean, it is part of the work environment.
You got a guy that's collapsed on the floor of the press. All right, so what did you do with him?
I picked him up and I carried him downstairs. And I laid him down as gently as I could on the asphalt. And then I had to leave. And I'm sorry that it took another 90 minutes for the...
Ted Bell laid there for 90 minutes while the ambulance arrived, or didn't arrive, or was he was waiting for it to arrive. And Ted was conscious through that whole period.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, he was.
Okay, and he remembers beer being spilled on him, ice cream, people leaning over and looking at him, all kinds of stuff.
Well, I mean, at least nobody leaned over. I mean, what he said to me, and I'm only quoting him, Mr. Andre, he said it wasn't all that bad because a lady, and again, I want to be very clean, you know.
Watch out. Watch what you say.
Yeah, be careful.
I am. But he said it wasn't all that bad because a couple times a lady stepped across him, and she was in a dress, and he said that, you know...
Okay, that's all you need to say.
Yeah, I don't want to say any more than that, but he said she didn't have on underwear, and...
No, but you don't want to say any more than that, huh?
You didn't say what I got to say, man. I don't want to hear it.
Well, no, I didn't want to say any more than that.
Is there anything else you don't want to say any more of?
Well, yeah, he said that she didn't...
Never mind, okay? So Ted Bell is laying there on the ground, and kids are spilling beer on him.
And they're spilling... What is that in the background?
Right now, there's another brush fire up here in Bodego Hills, and so they're using our pond again.
Boy, you've had some fires up there, haven't you?
Yeah, we have, Phil. We've had some very bad fires, and we're hopeful that the fire season now is about to abate, and we're getting into November, so... But we did have one more little brush fire over here at Bodega Hill, or Bodacious Hill, I should say, because there's two hills there, and I don't, you know, if you remember the old TV show Officer and a Gentleman about the Bodacious, you know what?
Yeah.
Well, there's two hills there, and so they come to be known Bodacious, you know, the Bodacious Twin Hills.
Okay.
Well, don't you think that's interesting?
No, I don't, no. And I find this conversation to be getting really childish. So, let's talk about the game.
Well, Mr. Andrea.
Let's talk about the game, okay?
Yeah, and by the way, Ted said that he could come on and talk about the game if you want him to come on and talk about the game.
Oh, Ted is okay, huh?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I talked to him earlier, Mr. Andrea. Apparently, he feels better, but he also is not too sure if he feels better. He says he wants to... He wants to... it's like on a first-come, first-serve basis...
What do you mean a first come? Is that the fire plane?
Yeah, that's the plane that's scooping water up and taking it over to Bodacious Tata. We're not.
Would you please? There's a lady present.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Over to Bodacious Hills.
All right, now what is the story here? We got Ted Bell is what?
Well, Ted Bell said he wanted to take it step by step, come on a first come, first serve basis.
What does that mean he wants to come on the air?
Yeah.
On a first come, first serve basis?
Do you mean to say, Bud, that Ted wants to come on the air just to see as he goes?
See as he goes, yeah, or something like that.
So Ted, in other words, wants to see, you know, whether or not he can, you know, be strong enough to be on the air, I guess. Is that kind of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, kind of, but I'm not sure. How come I can see a line through your face?
I don't know. But you can see a line through my face. Very interesting. All right, I think it's probably the shadow. Looking at the video cast. So Ted Bell, first come, first serve.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Ted Bell is joining us from his home in Beverly Hills, California. Ted had a scare yesterday, and we're very, very grateful that you're all right, Ted. When you were in the press box and you were calling the game, and all of a sudden fans heard you having a difficult time. They heard you... you know, having a difficult time breathing, I guess, and having a difficult time pronouncing words. How you feeling now, buddy?
Phil, I feel better. I am taking it easy. I heard Steve say that he thinks he's going to be calling these games. No, I can assure you, no, that won't happen. I mean, I'm not saying I won't take your job. No, I know you don't want to take my job, but what I'm saying to you is you can't take my job. It's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, but we'll let them decide.
We'll let them decide. But in any event, Phil, at least I have the common courtesy to be on a telephone in a very nice, quiet room, and I'm not standing out near a pond.
I have to be out here to monitor the water intake.
Yeah, you do that. You know...
Well, let me ask you guys a question. This was a hell of a game yesterday. I know you missed broadcasting it, Ted, but... you're at each other's throats here, and this guy lifted you up and took you downstairs and may have saved your life.
Well, he may have saved my life. He laid me down on pavement in the noonday sun. I'm laying there. I can't move. And for 90 minutes, I lay there like a dead man. And the only laugh I got, the only little thing that allowed me to have some hope of living, was that lady stepping across me to go get something. I forget what she was doing. She must have stepped across me about a half a dozen times. And you know, and I won't get into it, but you know what I saw. And
yeah, probably a little bit of the morning.
Shut up, man.
Sorry.
Well, I'll tell you this much. It was a hell of a football game.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's take a look at this ball game yesterday. It was Denver and Dallas played in Dallas. And it was five touchdown passes thrown by Tony Romo. Five touchdown passes.
Well, you know, you made a very good point. You said that you hadn't seen a quarterback display like that by two quarterbacks because Peyton Manning had five touchdown passes. We can get the numbers for you, but I think since Unitas and Namath, that's how these two guys went back and forth. It's only the fourth time in NFL history that both teams have scored at least 48 points.
Only the fourth game since 1920.
Yeah, since 1920, they've only had three other games where two teams scored at least. Okay, so three times two is six.
Oh, you don't have to forget it. Don't do it like that. It doesn't make any difference.
I'm just trying to see how many different teams was involved.
It could have been some of the same teams.
What?
It could have been the same teams.
Yeah, don't you understand it could have been the same team? In other words, it could have been like, if it's four games, and we're talking three, oh, God, I hate you. I don't want to talk about this.
All right, hold on. I don't want Ted getting upset because he's still laying in a hospital bed. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we talk with Ted Bell, about Ted and Steve, about this magnificent football game yesterday, and also about this very unfortunate attack of asthma that got a hold of Ted partway through, I think, the first half, so that Steve Bozell was left to do the entire second half of the game. But what a game it was as the Denver Broncos beat the Dallas Cowboys. I think it was 51 to 48. 51 to 48. What a ball game. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. World famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com this Monday night. Nice to have you guys with us. And we return here after our fun-filled weekend. I ought to know. I ought to be better clued in on half the stuff that's going on around here. Like the Dodgers, which is my hometown team here, and I'm not expressing any particular support for the Dodgers above and beyond. In other words, I'm not trying to rub it into anybody. But that's been my team since I was a kid. And I don't even know what's going on with baseball, man. It's been so long since this town had a baseball team that was any good. I was watching the football yesterday, and I was listening to Ted and Steve, and you talk about a ball game. It was one holy hell of a game. So, Ted, there you are in the hospital with that asthma attack, and you're trying to breathe, and you're trying to, you know, get... you're also trying to get some of the scores of the games that are going on, as well as the game that you were going to be working. What was it that struck you about the game? And we'll ask you, Steve, because you were doing the game. What was it that struck you about this game more than anything else?
Well, I think, first of all, Phil, that the Denver Broncos made absolutely the right call at the end of the game. I heard Jim Nantz and Phil Sims and the rest of these guys talking about, oh, you know, they got to give the ball and hand the ball off and they can get another touchdown and all this. And I said, and I heard you say it, Steve, and you were right. You said, just kneel on the ball three times and get the hell out of there, you know.
That's absolutely right. You know, they want to run the ball. And a couple times Peyton Manning took off of the ball, tried to run with it, and I think that's because they was trying to strip it. There were submarines and guys in there trying to strip it. But the last thing you want to do, if you got a clean, it's going to be clean as a baby's, you know, it's just as clean as the crack on a bone on a little tiny baby. You don't have to say that. All right, what I'm saying, hold on for a minute. Yeah, there he goes. Yeah. Boy, that's pretty.
Are you watching that airplane again? Because I'm telling you, it's very difficult to hear.
Steve, if you could get out of that, it's noisy, okay?
Well, I understand that and I appreciate it, gentlemen, but I'm looking at these fires. We don't get a lot of these fires, you know, and I want to make sure they do it right, okay? Bodacious Hills is just out down around here, and I can't say what it means to me, but I'll tell you, when April and I split up, and the only thing that I had in my life that was even remotely like being with a woman was I'd look out the window at bodacious. You know,
boy, that's sad.
Yeah, you better believe it's sad. No, I mean, that's sad just from the standpoint of what kind of a guy you are, that you get your sexual kicks looking at mountains. Buddy, let me just say something.
Hold on for a minute. I want to stick to the football game, okay?
Look at this. Look at it right here. Yeah, all right, man. I'm giving him the thumbs up. You know what? That guy in that plane doesn't care.
I beg your pardon?
The guy in the plane doesn't care. He doesn't care that you think you're cool and you're down with fire guys, you know. What, do you think he's your pal?
He gave me a thumb. Let me just tell you something, okay?
Are you going to tell me that he gave you the thumbs up back?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know, because I know a couple, they always do that with people. They do that with kids, and they do that with retarded people. I'm sorry. You know,
so in other words, what you're saying...
Okay, if you guys keep arguing, I'll hang up, and you guys can have this argument in Ted's hospital room or wherever, but it's not going to happen on the air.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I am too.
All right, good. Peyton Manning, Denver Broncos, what struck you about the game, Steve Bozell?
Well, the thing, more than anything else, is that Peyton Manning had to keep the ball out of the end zone. You didn't want him to, you certainly didn't want Peyton Manning to give the ball to a running back and to try and get the touchdown, and that's going to give the Dallas Cowboys a chance at the football again. And you sure didn't want to kick the field goal preliminarily. And so what they wanted to do is run that clock down, but not give time on the clock, not score a touchdown or anything like that. So I think Peyton Manning made the right calls. He would scramble away, try to get away from the line of scrimmage, and eventually when time was about to expire, 2 seconds left, then he went ahead and they done did it. Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you said that, Steve, because I couldn't figure out what was going on at the end of the game at all. I didn't understand what they were doing. Maybe I don't know football that well. But what I did want to comment on was Tony Romo's performance was just magnificent. 506 yards, 5 touchdown passes, maybe the best game of his career, and he throws the pick at the end, and there you go. It was just like that.
Well, that's a hell of a time to throw an interception, and God knows we've seen Peyton Manning do that. One of the interceptions Peyton Manning threw was in a Super Bowl. Was that pick a couple of years ago in the Super Bowl, or was it the AFC title game? But he threw a very, very, it was just a devastating interception for the Indianapolis Colts at the time that ended the game for them. Anytime the game ends on an interception, it's brutal.
Yeah, there's no question about that, Bill, and Romo, you know, looked disappointed. But I tell you right now, this kid, Tony Romo, come into his own. I don't think I'm ever going to see Tony Romo as anything other than, you know, a good top-flight NFL quarterback, because I used to think the guy was sort of maybe this, maybe that, maybe, you know, I didn't really all that impressed with him going out with them. But they did show Jessica Simpson. She looks like she's matured, and she looks like she's turned into a mother, like a real woman. And
what do you mean, Jessica Simpson?
Are you talking about the blonde they showed? They showed the lady that he dated.
That's not Jessica Simpson, man. That was someone else. Who was he supposed to be dating anyway? Who was that?
It was supposed to be Jessica Simpson, but that wasn't her.
No, I know that wasn't her.
Hold on. The lady they showed was blonde and had a big...
No, that was not her. That was his wife. That is his current wife. I think they even have a child.
Boy, he didn't waste no time, did he?
Well, I don't know, man, but that wasn't whoever that chick was that he was dating, no.
Yeah, I remember when Terrell Owens said, man, you got to get rid of her, man. She's messing me up. And, you know, when a guy like Terrell Owens tells you that, you better listen. No, I wouldn't listen. If I was the quarterback of that team and Terrell Owens came to me...
You tell me you wouldn't listen to Terrell Owens if he told you to get rid of that bar trash.
What do you mean, bar trash? Boy, you got a mouth on you.
Okay, this is completely pointless and beside the point, guys. We don't need to talk about it. Tony Romo is married to another woman. He's not going out with whoever that chick is. It was a great football game. He threw that pick, and at the end of the game, it was identical stats in terms of touchdowns and interceptions thrown for both Peyton Manning and... Peyton Manning had 4 touchdown passes and an interception. And Romo 5 in an interception. Romo 506 yards. Peyton Manning 300 and some change. I mean, it was a pretty boss day for Peyton Manning. Maybe even hit 400 yards. But it was quite the day for two outstanding quarterbacks, a new generation in the National Football League. Ted Bell and Steve Bozell, I thank you guys for joining us. Steve, have they put that fire out there in the Bodacious Hills, wherever it is?
Yeah, they're still working on the Bodacious Fire. I want to make it clear to Ted Bell and anybody else, I'm not saying that when April left, you know, when we were separated, that I'd stand here in the kitchen staring out the window at Bodacious Peak and go, I want to get with that mountain. I mean, what do you think I am anyway?
Well, that's the way you're putting it. You're talking about how that's the only sexual...
All I would say is I'd look at Bodacious Peak and what we call Rocky Top, and I'd remember about the sweet love that I used to make to my wife.
All right, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make fun of you.
No, it's okay.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Ted.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Phil, and we will be back at you, of course, this Sunday with another Pro Football Game of the Week.
All right. There's Ted Bell and Steve Bozell.
I think that Steve Bozell, the sooner he's in to see a professional about whatever it is that ails him, the better.
Yeah, you know, I he must earn one hell of a living.
Why say that?
Why would any woman stay with a guy like that? Why would any woman stay with a sniveling, whining crybaby like that who's suing everybody that insults him, suing everybody that makes him feel bad, everybody that even remotely offends him? Why would a woman stay with him unless he makes a great living? It's got to be.
Well, there's one other reason, and I don't want to be graphic, but let's just say hits the floor and rolls to the wall.
You always say that. That's getting old.
I ought to beat your ass.
Hey, watch it.
Getting old.
He said it was getting old, not you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
But he's right. It is getting old. All right, so Steve Bozell and Ted Bell, I hope you're feeling better there, Ted. It's a brutal thing. World-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com, and we're online, of course, at philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and check out what we got for you, man. Thanks to everybody at the LA Podfest this past weekend. What a blast. I mean, what an absolute blast we had. Hey, this month of Halloweeny, man, it is the Pastor William Rennick Silver Bullet Special. You get a backstage pass this month. We'll stick something in your sack, man. It's a treat. It ain't no trick. So we'll jam a treat up your sack if you get a backstage pass this month. And we also are going to be rolling out our affiliate program. What is that? Stay tuned.
All I said, and that's all I said. No, that's not all you said.
Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. Online at philhendryshow.com. You know, there's a bunch of stuff happening. Why am I not remembering? I want you to write this stuff down, bud.
You were supposed to put that stuff down in a list, bud.
Yeah, well, I did forgot.
Well, you don't forget, man. I forgot. I want this stuff on a list. Okay?
Why? I mean...
You know, it's not that I don't want to break your castanets on this thing, but if I say to you I need some, that means I got to see it on the air, man. So the stuff, we got a lot of stuff happening. We got the affiliate program for our BSPs. We are rolling out another tier, another pay tier, which I don't want to tell anybody anything about. I also wanted to do a thorough thank you to everybody at the LA Podfest. Bobby Dooley was there. Did I already do this?
Well, you said sort of half-assed.
Half-assed.
Yeah, it was half-assed.
All right, so it was half-assed. Sorry, folks. Bobby Dooley was there with Graham Elwood, and then the Sklar Brothers had me on last night on the Scarborough Country podcast. And as I said, we ran into a lot of nice people, good friends, all kinds of folks. Greg Fitzsimmons. Greg, love you, babe. Greg has a great podcast, and he does a couple of hours on Sirius XM, and he's going to have us back on. And the Sklar Brothers are going to do a quid pro quo with Bobby.
Well, finally, Bobby's getting some guests again.
Well, she gave up on her podcast because she's too lazy to book it herself. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but we'll have her on later on. And I was just talking to Matt, my technical director. It's my father-in-law, Big Al, man. He's not doing good. He's sick.
Sorry to hear that, Mr. Hendry.
Thank you, bud.
What's his name?
Al. He's my father-in-law.
And what does he do?
Well, he's retired now.
No, I mean, what is he? Yeah, what is he?
What do you mean, what is he?
You said he's your what?
My father-in-law.
Oh, okay.
And what's his name?
Do I have to start kicking ass here?
Phil, I didn't hear his name.
Al. Al.
Al.
Yes, Al. He's sick. Okay?
Well, I hope he gets better.
Well, he's not doing too good. And I just want to send a, you know, a little power, kind of a power blast out to you, Al. Just kind of good vibes, some good thoughts, some good vibrations, some hippy-dippy stuff, man. You never know. It can help. Al's a great guy, and he is, he's that generation. He's my ex-wife's father. He's my ex-father-in-law, but I still feel very, you know, close to those guys. And he, Al was in the Air Force. He told me so many stories when he was, he grew up in Chicago. He grew up in Chicago. Guess what his first language was?
Spanish.
Why'd you say Spanish?
Yeah, what was that about?
Well, you said guess what his first language was. It obviously wasn't English.
Yeah, well, you're obviously not going to be English.
Well, that's true, okay. It was German.
What?
German, because there was Germans in Chicago, man, not necessarily Spanish people, okay? It was German. His folks were both from Germany. And so even though he was born in the United States, the first language that he spoke at home was German. And then he learned English, you know, as he interacted in the neighborhood. And in those days, if you wanted beer, they literally, I used to think this was a joke or something, he would take a bucket, his mother would give him a bucket, say, go on down to the corner and get some beer.
Now, why would they sell that to a child?
Because that's what they did in those days. In those neighborhoods, they understood, oh, the kid's in to get beer for the family. And she'd give him like a nickel, man. You could fill a whole bucket full of beer.
Well, you made a buck a buck, when they get a can?
Well, because they didn't have cans back then, man.
You talk about that didn't have no can opener or anything?
No, they didn't have no can opener. I don't know what they had. I guess they didn't have can. I think they had cans, but nobody was bright enough to think about canned beer. That's why that saying, you know, the greatest thing since canned beer. Anyway, he told me all kinds of stories, going to Mexico when he was 19, and then he got in the Air Force, and he went to Europe. And in those days, I guess he can still do this, you could go into wherever the planes were taking off, if you were like in the Air Force, okay?
Yeah.
You could go into wherever these planes were leaving from, and I think he was at an air base at that time when we still had these kinds of relations with France. It was an air base in France. Now the French kicked us out, so we don't have any air bases there anymore. But he's looking at this thing, and it says, he wanted to go to England. It said, we're going to Helsinki. And it was 1952 during the Olympics. So he goes, oh, I think I'll go there. And he and about 30 guys piled on this plane and flew into Helsinki and spent like a week getting hammered and, well, I better not say.
You've got to be kidding me. In a United States uniform, an Air Force uniform, conducting himself like that.
Yeah, but at least he was getting his ashes hauled.
Never mind about his ashes getting hauled, okay?
Well, that was going on.
That is a disgrace.
Oh, will you give me a break? So anyway, yeah, he's in a U.S. Air Force uniform, and he's in Helsinki, and yeah, he had a couple of girlfriends. The guy wasn't married. The guy's 19 years old. What do you want from him? So anyway, well, however old he was, I don't know. But so he had a million stories. So I'm telling you, Al, if there's anything I can do, anything I can say, anything I can be.
Probably want you to stay away for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll stay away, all right?
No, I'm just talking about if you show up. Maybe all that excitement, he can't have that.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know how they how those things, whether the excitement's going to hurt him or not. I have no idea. 855-500-7445, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And then we come to the story and to the topic that we just all love. Because nothing makes me feel better than talking about America and the politicians that run it and the Congress and the groovy, beautiful stuff, what's going on back there in Washington.
You got some real... These guys are real hand-wringing gloids, the way they're doing this one.
Absolutely. Debt limit breach, no big deal. Some GOP lawmakers say, I don't know what's happening here, man. But now the story is that Boehner is not going to allow this default to take place, that they're finally going to get the budget in place. They're finally going to have some money to operate with, and this nonsense can go away. And... If I will tell you this, if the Tea Party guys have made friends, if they've found people that they've been able to sway with this action, more power to them. You know, more power to them. I to be honest with you, it scares me.
Why?
Because I think anybody that gets swayed to be a Tea Party member by what has just happened has not even begun to do their due diligence in looking into this issue. They don't even know what it's about. If they are swayed by what these knuckleheads did, because it was some pretty just usurious activity. So now the next thing is this debt limit that is coming up. Harvey Wireman joins us from San Marino, California. As you know, Harvey is an attorney at law, and most of what he has done in his life has been criminal defense work. But we wanted to get Harvey on here to talk a little bit about politics because, Harvey, you in your travels, you've certainly involved yourself in the adjudication of economic issues, lawsuits, and things, even white-collar crime. So this would not appear to be something too far afield of what you do. What do you, and plus you've been back in D.C., what do you make of this fight coming up?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the debt ceiling fight is the one, and I think a lot of people, I've been around so long, I remember all of these fights going back to the 1930s, as a matter of fact, but I'm going to get my glasses on here and tell you the boobaloo. You see, now again, these are the wrong glasses.
Okay, Harvey, I can't keep doing this, man.
Hold on, Henry, please. I don't have time right now for your little impatience act. Go get Mommy and get the glasses.
Harvey, every time you're on the program, you're talking to your granddaughter about glasses.
That's right. I'm talking to my granddaughter because she doesn't know enough to get the right glasses when I told her. Thank you very much, dear. There, these are the right glasses. These are purple. These are not the right glasses.
Well, why do you have the guy on the show?
That's it. Hey, they're right there. The kid said it. Why do you have me on the show?
Because your speakers bureau calls us up and asks us if we want to have you on the show.
Oh, okay. Honey, go get the glasses from Mommy, and then bring Grandpa some of the smart water that I bought. Yeah. That's it, baby. All right, so the debt limit, Phil, is no big deal according to the GOP. Now, Republican lawmakers are breaking,
skepticism, man,
Oh, hey, man, I'm sorry, I'm an old man, all right? Give me a break.
Republican lawmakers are voicing increasing skepticism.
Yeah, about DeRay warnings that failing to raise
The debt ceiling.
How do you get debt ceiling out of that?
D-E-B-T. The B is silent.
What do you mean the B is silent?
Do you see a word there that says D-E-B-T?
Yeah.
That's debt.
Well, the B's silent.
Yes, the B's now key-elling. I don't know what that is.
C-E-I-L-I.
Ceiling.
Okay. That's a debt ceiling robber to result in... Oh, boy, this is a tough one. Catastrophe. Catatropica.
Catatropica? What the hell?
Is that catastrophic?
Yes, okay, you got a catastrophic defibrillator. I would dispel the rumor that is going around that you hear on every nucus. What the hell is a nucus?
Newscast?
Okay, newscast. That if we don't raise the debt ceiling, debt ceiling, we will default on our debt. Debt. We won't. That's Tom Colburn. He's a Republican from alcohol. What state is alcohol?
Oklahoma.
Oh, Oklahoma.
All right, well, let's take a break here.
Well, he's being informative.
Yeah, guy can't even read no English or anything.
Well, at least he can read a little bit. You can't speak it at all.
All right, now hold on for a minute. In the state of alcohol, I mean, that guy's mind is going at an ever-increasing rate. Every time I have him on, it gets worse and worse. At least he's not clearing his throat anymore. Remember when he used to do that whole that thing?
Oh, yeah, man, he doesn't do that?
No. But if he doesn't get that granddaughter to get squared away and bring him the right glasses, I think I'm going to lose it, man. They're going to put me in a padded cell. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we continue to talk with Harvey Wireman about the battle on Capitol Hill over a variety of topics, most prominent of which, of course, is the argument over money. It's always about money. It's the thing that breaks up romances and marriages. Money. It's the thing that puts us all into a high state of depression. Money. It's the thing that Ash told the two mechanics on the alien ship that they wouldn't get if they didn't help them go get the alien. Money. You know.
What?
Never mind. World famous Phil Henry Show. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com, and a glorious, happy, and marvelous... I was going to say Merry Christmas. I guess we're not even...
No, it's Halloween. That's about it.
Close to Halloween. World-famous Phil Henry Show. So thank you very much, Harvey, for that, and we'll see what we will see. I don't know. Five things that couldn't happen in the movie Gravity. There's a new movie out called Gravity. The Sandra Bullock, George Clooney space thriller set an October opening weekend record, surpassing Paranormal Activity's $52 million debut in 2011. Many critics also hailed the film, which centers around characters being set adrift in space, but some in the science community have taken exception to some of the facts presented. You always got to, you know, tell people it can't happen like this. You know, this is not... You know, I realized, I don't know that it gets much dumber than this. And I realize, of course, we have challenged the generation of people that thought the Martians were landing with War of the Worlds. Remember those people got their shotguns and ran out and thought Martians were landing?
What is that?
Well, that was back in the 30s when they did the War of the Worlds and people thought there was a Martian.
Oh, that, on a War of the World?
Yes, War of the Worlds, man. They thought there were Martians landing because of the way that Orson Welles did it. And we look back on those days with a kind of arrogance, thinking, aren't those people stupid? Well, I hate to break the news, but we ain't much brighter when we think that, you know, an industrial accident could indeed cause an apocalypse of zombies to descend upon us, just like in Walking Dead.
Well, is that the guy I'm trying to shoot his girlfriend? What?
Some guy, I've told the story, but what I'm trying to say is the stuff we believe, it's mind-boggling. Yeah, some jackass. I mean, this is a guy that deserves to just get beat up. You know what I'm saying by that? I don't mean dead. I don't mean killed. But he deserves to be beat up. Any guy that would pull a gun because he's so angry that his girlfriend will not cop to, at least agree in theory, with the idea that an industrial accident could cause zombies, and he got so angry at her.
What do you mean, an industrial accident?
Well, whatever the hell started The Walking Dead. I don't know what.
It's a military experiment gone awry.
All right, so it's a military experiment gone awry. This guy was arguing with his girlfriend that it's possible. Well, I suppose anything's possible. She was saying, no, it's not possible. There's nothing in the science that we know. There's nothing in the world of science that we have found out. There's nothing in the catalog of human knowledge that would even remotely lead us to believe that you could reanimate a corpse in any kind of way, whether it's an industrial accident, an accident involving bacteriological weapons, the military, whatever. So she was at least working from she was looking at the database and saying, there's nothing here that tells us that can happen. And this jackass, because he spends most of his time staring at a television set when he isn't, you know, masturbating to porn on the internet, what?
We're not laughing, Phil. We're staring at you so you can feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't think that's funny.
Well, so you want to make me feel like a creep or something?
Yeah.
Anyway, when the guy isn't doing that, he's, he's imagining these things. So they got into an argument. She left. Then she came back, and he met her on the front lawn with a gun and shot her. Now, she wasn't killed, and I believe that she's out of the hospital. Whatever injury was inflicted was not life-threatening. But like I said, that's a guy that deserves to have his ass kicked. Until five or six guys. Seriously, like he deserves to have five or six guys kick his ass until he acknowledges that he's an utter imbecile for ever having proposed such a thing.
Yeah, you'd have kicked that guy's ass and still don't think the same thing.
Yeah, but you see, what I'm saying is this. He may think the same thing, but I think people that think those things should be frightened of thinking them.
Well, Phil, that's mind control. That's like 1984, where, you know, the pain inflicted on you causes you to think...
No. I'm not talking about inflicting pain on someone so that when you hold up two fingers, they see three. I'm not playing those games. I'm talking about someone who believes something that does not yet exist, and in point of fact, there's nothing that even indicates it could ever exist other than a television show. And I'm not even talking about a guy that indicates, that believes something that there's nothing that indicates it could exist. I'm talking about a guy that was willing to pick up a gun and shoot somebody over it.
So that would be the punishment.
Yeah, I think that would be a good punishment. I think every time that guy thought about zombies reanimating because of some sort of a chemical spill or accident in the army, I think he should remember the day he got his ass beat and keep it to himself.
Man, that sounds pretty good to me.
I think it's the way to go, man. And now we have this film called Gravity. Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson took to Twitter over the weekend to offer several mysteries of the galaxy, including the film Gravity should be renamed Angular Momentum. He points out what the film got wrong, from the fact that Bullock's hair didn't float free to why she, as a medical doctor, was on the mission to start with. So, basically, this is a scientist and a series of astronauts taking a look at a Hollywood movie, and if this kind of thing should be done more often, and they're reviewing it for factual errors. They should do this with historical films as well. They should have had somebody sit down and say, you're about to see a movie based upon the gangs of New York. All right, I'm Dr. Swenson, I'm a historian, and let me tell you what part of this film is so loaded down with bullcrap you want to cry, okay?
Well, Phil, now, that was a good movie.
No, baby.
Baby?
Yes. No, it was not a good movie. All right, so number one, the way the shuttle travels. NASA expert Michael A. Interbartolo didn't even have to wait for the film to come out to dispute this. When the trailer premiered, he wrote that the relative motion of the shuttle in the film Gravity, appears to be off for the chain of events that follow. The way I'm seeing it, the shuttle has wings level, payload bay up, right wing into the orbital velocity vector, nose in Y, wrote the astronaut. He said, however, he said he flew the shuttle in mission control for 11 years, and the MMOD impact puts it in a roll about Y with it still traveling at the velocity of X. And why are the forward and aft reaction control jets not firing to damp the ramp since they were intact in the trailer? Translation for you non-science types out there. It's more movie magic than actual science that has the shuttle getting smacked with debris and then heading in the direction it is set. Sandra Bullock keeps defying gravity with her career. Rendezvous in Space is not as easy or as quick as the film makes it appear. Bullock plays Ryan Stone, a medical engineer on her first mission in space, who gets set adrift on an accident. Part of the action involves her trying to make her way back to her fellow astronaut, but according to Interbartolo, it's a wonder that Clooney's character doesn't get shredded by all the debris floating around the incident. We'll get back to this and more when we come back. World famous Phil Henry Show, I'm sorry. But I had to at least get you primed or prepped or whatever the hell you want to call it. So all that debris that's floating around, right?
Yeah.
That stuff is going to go right through a guy, man. That stuff is, those are like bullets, because the guy's traveling like 20,000 miles an hour.
What?
We'll be right back. World famous Phil and Vision. And welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. And we're here every night until 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And all of the fun that can be had, all of the fun that we can cram into those 3 hours, we do definitely try to do that. We like to say there's radio, and then there's the Phil Henry Show.
And what does that mean?
Well, we don't know, but it's good, you know.
Well, you can't say it's good until you, you know.
I can say anything I want to say. I can say anything I want to say, as long as I don't slander anybody, as long as I don't. As long as I don't endanger public health and safety, I can say any damn thing I want. I can say that there are little men that live in your house.
Shut up, will you?
Why does he do that?
Because Bud's got this thing about little men that live in his house.
You don't think they're really little men.
No, I don't, but it was a show that I saw.
He saw that Twilight Zone where there were little tiny people.
What?
The Twilight Zone where there's little tiny people who live in a guy... Or, I mean, they land on a planet of tiny people.
They landed on a planet of little people, and this one guy was two astronauts, and one of them was a real ass, and he had a megalomaniacal kind of mindset, so he forced the little tiny people on this planet to build monuments to him and stuff. You didn't see that one?
No, I didn't see that asinine. What was that?
Asinine? It was Rod Serling. Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it's Rod Sterling.
Rod Serling, not Sterling.
Yeah.
But what's your problem with it?
Just if they lived in your house is all.
Man, they ain't gonna live in your house. Why don't they live in your house? They live on another planet, man.
Yeah, but you're...
Hey, Bud, you know something, man? You worry about more stuff that's weird. Whatever your problem is in life, you know, and we God knows we all have them, but for you to worry about crap that you don't even need to worry about, little men living in your house, give it up, will you?
Well, Phil, you're about to read this story. Now, do you have Dr. Tarter on the phone?
I've got that. Yes, I... What about it?
When will you get a load of what he's got to say?
Dr. Ron Tarner is going to join us here. There's a story here about, as you know, we do an awful lot of science on this program. We have Dr. Ron Tarner from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. He's going to be talking with us this hour about a story that I find fascinating, and we do, from time to time, do these kinds of news stories. This is about an ancient primate whose fossil has been discovered. And for the longest time, they have looked for the missing link. What is that primate? What is that hominid down the long line of hominids that the human being has descended from? Which one was the one that connects us to the dumb ape? And which is the bridge, if you will, between the dumb ape and the higher intellect primate hominid. So,
And what do you mean by hominid?
And that's not trying to make a joke. That's not like a homo or anything.
Yeah.
No, it's not like a homosexual?
Yeah.
No, it isn't, Bud. Why do I believe you already know that?
I swear to God.
No, he doesn't. He asked me about it.
Boy, you know what? Then I don't feel bad about saying this. You really are dumb, man. I mean...
Well...
Whew! Man. All right, Dr. Ron Tarner,
Phil, I will second that, Bud. As much as I appreciate you, you are dumb. You are dumb, and it seems like you get dumber every time, I come on your program.
Well, I mean, I appreciate that, Dr. Tarner. I mean, coming from you, because I got, a lot to,
Let me ask you, hold on for a minute, Bud. Are you moving around in the room there?
Why?
Because this is how you sound. You're going, I appreciate Dr. Tarner. Even my son knows how to hold a phone.
Yeah, he is, Dr. Tarner, waving his head around and looking at his feet. What are you looking for?
There's some kind of...
Maybe he's looking for one of those little men.
Yeah, maybe you're looking for a little man. You got a little man there?
No, I'm not looking for a little man.
Well, then please pay attention to what I'm saying to you. I'm saying to you, Bud, that you are dumb, but there is hope.
It's okay?
Whatever.
Oh, okay, whatever. Well...
All right, look, Dr. Tarner, let's get to this story. An ancient primate... has been discovered, and this animal apparently is, or at least they like to think it is, the missing link. I thought I was losing my glasses. I've got them. The Achilles heel was his weak spot in the Greek myth, but the heel of a newly discovered primate provides a strong connection between humans and their possible ancestors. This is an article in CNN on the CNN website for science. And you're familiar with this this guy, Dr. Tarner, are you not?
Well, I am, Phil, and it also is an animal that I am very, very grateful we have finally been able to identify, because I do believe it is the missing link. And I also believe it's the missing link in ways that we've only begun to imagine. This is probably the oldest primate skeleton that we have ever found. It's from a creature that resembles very closely the human evolutionary line, which is the anthropoids, and a different primate lineage called the tarsiers, T-A-R-S-I-E-R-S. Scientists have named this the Archosebus Achilles, making reference to the heel bone. And I want to be very clear, the heel bone which resembles those of the bonnet bucky. Okay?
You said a bonnet bucky?
No, I said monkey, you ass. Scott.
Okay, take it easy, Dr. Tarner.
No, but if I've got to deal with this guy, you know...
He said bunky.
You know he has a sinus condition.
Exactly.
Monkey.
All right.
Yeah, is he going to be there taking the pot shots throughout this?
Yes, he is, but not taking pot shots, no. I want you to ask intelligent questions, bud.
I'm awfully sorry, Dr. Tarner, but I did hear you say... You did say the modern bunky.
I didn't say modern bunky. I said modern bunk... God, I hope you die.
Wow, what a thing to say.
That was terrible.
Well, you know what? He leaves me no choice.
Well, I will die someday.
Not soon enough for my taste.
All right, so let's move on now. It's called the, what is it, the Airbus?
Not Airbus. Arquebus Achilles...
All right, I'm sorry. The Arquebus Achilles, and it has an Achilles heel, which resembles those of modern monkeys.
That is correct. Now, anthropoids include humans, they include apes, and they include monkeys. Tarsiers are nocturnal primates that live only in southeastern Asia today. The study was published in the...
Are you reading that?
No. This is strictly from memory. Now, for the first time, it shines a light on the important phase of the primate and human evolution. But what is the most important part of this study, and the most important part of this discovery, is something that I have been championing now for the last 26 years. The idea that we made a decision, the missing link made a decision, do we stay in the trees, or do we descend to the ultimate... confusion, and yes, disorientation and carnage and death below. And I believe that the bonnet bucky, or at least the ancient bucky, that descended from that tree made a big mistake. I also believe, Phil...
You believe it's this anthropoid, as they say?
Yes, I do. And the reason why I do is because we've been able to articulate a picture of this animal... And if you see this Arquebus Achilles, or the Arquebus Achilles, you will see that it very clearly has very big, expressive, intelligent eyes and has a smile on its face. Now, that tells me that that animal was intelligent enough to know that he should have stayed in the tree and minded his own business. I get very emotional about these things, Phil.
I'll just allow you that, and we are going to take a break. But you're saying some things here that are bordering on almost fantastic, okay?
No, I'm not. No, what? No, I am not.
No, he isn't, Phil.
Well, I mean, it has a smile on its face.
I'm saying that the structure of the jaw, oh, my God. I'm not saying that it's smiling because it's happy, but I am saying it's smiling because it's intelligent. And I'm saying it's smiling because it knows it has a decision. It can go both ways.
What do you mean?
If he makes a bisexual...
All right, hold on. We're going to take a break here on the Phil Henry Show. Bud, you know when you're asking these loaded questions.
I'm talking about what he means by both ways.
He's not talking about bisexuality.
All right.
He's talking about whether the early... this early animal, this primate, that is the link between the lower apes and the higher intelligent hominids that came later, of which we are the most advanced, that this missing link made a decision. It could have stayed in the trees and just stayed a monkey squirreling around up there in the trees like a dumbass ape, or it could have come down to the ground and duked it out and done battle with other species, which is ultimately what it did.
Well, why is that bad?
I think Dr. Tarner is going to say it's bad because, it's almost like the biblical story of the tree of knowledge. You know?
So the tree of knowledge, what that ape came down out of?
Not really, but he's saying there was a decision that every species makes that can either guarantee its longevity, can guarantee its extinction, can guarantee some change in the evolutionary path that it takes, and this was a decision made by our ancestor many, many billions and millions and millions and millions of years ago to become human by coming out of that tree and going down into the Serengeti or wherever it was
Now, what is the Serengeti?
That's a plain in Africa, okay?
All right, all right.
Anyway, we'll be back with Dr. Ron Tarner and get to more of this marvelously and tantalizingly wonderful stuff. I don't know. It's goofy. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. And welcome back. You're the world famous Phil Hendry Show. I don't know. This is somebody I know. You know, if you got a pet, I can't stand people that treat animals like they're some sort of a disposable comfort, like the TV's broken, well, throw it out, get a new one. Pets are not like that, and anyway, it's nobody's business, but, you know, I don't want to bum people out with it or anything.
What, somebody do something with an animal?
No, it's nothing like that. It's they adopted an animal out that they should have kept. You know, I would have taken, it's a cat, and I would have taken the cat off of their hands. The thing about cats is, cats flip, man, when they leave their houses. You know, they like their houses, and they like their humans. And if you put them in a different house, then they go through a whole flip-out. They wig out, man. It really, it weirds them out. Cats are more territorial than dogs. Dogs are like pack animals, and cats are like territorial hunters. So they have, like, their territory, and they have their you know, one or two other, you know, hunters that they, I don't know.
What do you mean, hunter?
You're not talking about, like,
hunting.
Yeah, I'm talking about hunting, yes.
Well, a cat, Phil, a human, a domesticated cat.
They still have the same instincts, is all I'm saying. Let me, before I begin to lose it, Dr. Ron Tarner back on the line here with us from Mountain Meadow Observatory. All right, so we're talking about this primate, Dr. Tarner. A primate that was discovered, fossils of this primate were discovered, and this is an early animal that is believed to be, or could possibly be, the missing link between the lower primates and the higher hominids that human beings are a part of. One doctor, Christopher Beard, a paleontologist at Carnegie Museum of Natural History. What is a paleontologist, by the way? I'm sorry, Dr. Tarner, what's a paleontologist?
Well, a paleontologist, Phil, is quite simply one who studies ancient life form or prehistoric life form, one who is expert in the extinct life forms that existed prior to recorded history. So those would be, of course, prior to the Ice Age, when they can certainly include human life, when humans were basically a hunter-gatherer society, but they also more exactly include life prior to the emergence of the Homo sapien, and they include not only the older mammals, but as well dinosaur life and so forth. So we're talking a paleontologist can go back 500 million years or longer in the study of these animals.
All right, now we're looking at an animal here, as I mentioned, that is an ancestor to the human being, and they're talking about how old?
Well, this animal would be 55 million, I believe they're saying 55 million years old. So it is the oldest, and it's the oldest skeleton of a primate, and it's by far the most complete example of a primate of this period.
Now, when did the dinosaurs go extinct?
The dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago.
So the primate and a dinosaur would have lived at the same time.
No, they would not have lived at the same time.
No, Bud.
They would have... No, let me do it. They would not... Is it Bud?
Yeah.
The primate that I'm talking about is from 55 million years ago. The dinosaur went extinct 65 million years ago. So the dinosaur...
Oh, okay.
Hold on. So the dinosaur was extinct a good 10 million years before this primate came on the scene.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, what?
Okay, if you don't get the math, he's saying 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs went extinct, then came 55 million years ago, 10 million years later. See?
Because we're going in reverse, Bud.
Oh, okay.
God.
Oh, you know, you have my sympathy. So, anyway...
Just to conclude with Bud, so 10 million years later came this monkey. I want to get to...
It
not a monkey, Phil. It's not a monkey. It's an anthropoid, and it's an animal that is a higher level than a monkey. And I think you do it a disservice. I know that it's obviously it is extinct now, but I think it's an ancestor of ours, and to say this monkey is dismissive, I think, in any way that you would call someone a monkey.
Well, but he is a monkey.
He's an anthropoid. A monkey would be one of these dumb... If you go to the zoo and you see one of these dumb apes in the primate house, and it's got its legs crossed, and it's chewing on some... It's chewing its own feces, and it's just an idiot. That's a monkey. I don't like to think of these animals as monkeys because, again, these are descendants of the human species.
All right, that's fine. This primate... Is that accurate?
Yes, primate, anthropoid.
All right. This primate, you said, had a smile on its face and had very intelligent, expressive eyes and was this is the species, this is the missing link that made the decision to leave the trees and go on to the floor of the forest or of the desert and then contend with animals on that level for food.
Well, absolutely, Phil, because... it was at that time that this creature decided it could no longer sustain itself by living in the trees, that it was no longer going to be able to survive. And also, keep in mind, this is an ancestor of the human race. So this ape is looking down on animals that it knows are much less intelligent. It knows that if it had what those animals had, if it had the space, it had access to the food sources, and you can well imagine this monkey working the math out.
Well, when you say working out the math...
No, I'm not saying that... You have to resist, but you really have a... Wow, you know...
Yeah, Phil, the Dr. Turner is not saying that he's up there with a calculator.
No, I'm saying, Phil...
You're colloquially, and you're using kind of slang...
Yeah, just in a slang way, I'm saying... Although the monkey was a descendant of the human being, the anthropoid that I'm talking about, so this missing link, if you will, is looking at these animals and it's thinking, you know, if you wanted to put a human thought, it's thinking, you got to be kidding me. You know, I could be down there and I could be living like a king instead of living in this toilet where I am. Because really, where that ape lived was up in a tree where, as I said, the food source was very rare. And life was getting very, very sparse.
Well, then, it's a natural decision for any animal to make to go to a place where there's more food, to go to a place where there is a better opportunity for territory, food, offspring, and so forth, correct?
That is absolutely correct, yes. But when you look at the artist's rendering of this anthropoid, the smile on the face, the big eyes, you not only see an animal that is ready to come out of the trees and go down onto the forest floor and begin to compete for those food sources, you see an animal that already has formulated a plan on how he's going to do it. And that I find...
Okay, Doc, you're telling me not to attribute to this animal any human characteristics.
Well, you wanted to believe that it was smiling because it was telling a joke to itself or something.
Well, no, but you're saying that the ape... Not ape, I'm sorry.
It's not an ape. It's not an ape.
All right, the primate, or the anthropoid, is smiling because he's formulating a plan, but doesn't that indicate that he's smiling because he thinks he's got...
Well, yes, he believes that he's got the goods on... He believes he's going to put one over on them, yeah.
Well, doesn't that make him have a sense of humor?
He may have a sense of humor, but he's not up there. But Phil wanted people to believe that he was up there going, boy, I'm really going to go down there and kick ass. Not thinking that.
I didn't say any of that. I said that when you said that the animal was smiling, I said, did he have a sense of humor? And you go, no, ba-ba, you know.
No, I didn't go, no, ba-ba. I said... You know, the monkey is up there, and he's looking at all the stuff he can do, but he's not going, boy, wait till I get down there and kick ass. He's not saying that.
All right, we'll be right back here with Dr. Ron Turner. I'm not saying it either, Doc. I guess we're having a hard time being heard or being understood. Dr. Ron Turner on the line with us here as we talk about the discovery of a primate that could very well be the missing link that science has so long looked for between the lower monkeys and the higher apes. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
great story. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here. We're out of here at 10 o'clock on the Pacific Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast. We have Dr. Ron Tarner on the line with us, and we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Tarner on the missing link. And then we have a couple of stories on vinyl. I was just talking to Matt.
Well, you had a lot of those records, too.
I did, and I don't have any more. Dr. Tarner, so where we left off here, this is a fossil.
And you know something, Phil, I just wanted to say, I'm not too comfortable when I'm on your program and I'm bringing up something of scientific import that I think is very important, and I get the sense that someone's laughing at me over there.
No, we're not, Dr. Tarner, but you have to understand, sir.
No, you have to understand, my friend, that this is science and this is serious, and I don't find anything funny about it. Because I said the monkey had a smile, I didn't say monkey, I said an anthropoid or primate had a smile on his face. I didn't mean to say that he was looking at the animals and thinking his you know what, as I always find myself saying on your program, is you know what, didn't smell.
His you know what didn't smell. You mean didn't?
Yes.
All right,
what's with the pause? Okay, are you trying to say that I'm some kind of a freak?
No, what I'm trying to say is this. This is all I'm trying to say. The smile on this monkey's face, first, it's not a monkey, I'm sorry.
It is not a monkey.
All right. The smile on this anthropoid's face was put there by an artist. Why?
Because he felt that the level of intelligence that that animal had would bespeak a smile as if to say, when I get out of here, you watch what happens.
And you don't think that that is an intelligent mind that almost borders human?
Oh, please. Please. Are you kidding me?
Well, Dr. Tarner, it does sound...
No. You people, I have put up with about as much as I'm going to put up with from you people. I said, Phil...
I don't like the you people thing, Dr. Tarner, and I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm just interpreting it back to you. If there's something I'm getting wrong, that's fine. I don't believe that you have to impugn our intelligence.
What I'm saying to you, if you listen, is the animal, this primate animal, which is the missing link, which has the Achilles bone heel that many, many of the higher apes have, this animal has a smile on its face with very wide, intelligent eyes because he is looking down at the idiots. That's what he's looking at. And he's thinking, this is going to be beautiful. You know,
and that doesn't sound like a human.
A human? Humans think that way, sure. But we don't live in trees and we don't have tails. Woo! This guy.
Okay. You know.
Well, you know, Phil, when you're in over your head.
That's right. I'm in over my head. That's it.
No, I'm saying, what am I saying if there's somebody who wants to, you know.
All right, we got a phone call here. Austin is on the line. Austin calling from Lancaster, California. Austin, you're on with Dr. Ron Tarner. He has a question about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, Dr. Tarner, I enjoy your program.
It's not my program. It's Phil Henry's.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm enjoying listening to you, but when you're talking about the this primate, as you call it, the anthropoid, and it's smiling... Could it not be just smiling because it feels good?
Because it feels good to smile? No, I don't think so, because I don't think... this was the missing link, Austin.
Yes, sir.
And that means that this animal was on his way to some bigger and brighter things. He was not hanging around the tree smiling like a mental deficient. He was on his way to... He was getting out of that tree come hell or high water...
So, in other words, the smile represents achievement.
The smile represents the belief that he is finally going to pull himself up out of the gutter and make something of himself.
Okay, thank you very much, Austin.
Well, wait a minute, Phil. I'm not done.
Phil, can I...
No, we're going to take a break. Not take a break, but we're going to get rid of you.
You're going to get rid of me, huh?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. You tell me that I'm acting idiotic, that the thing is going to pull itself up out of the gutter.
Well, I hope someday you're never a scientist and you never have to go on a talk show and you never have to talk to you. Because I'm telling you, it not only is it sad, but it burns when I urinate.
Good evening to you.
Boy, that was about as...
What did he say?
He said, not only is it sad talking to me, but it burns when he urinates.
Well, I don't think you treated him with much respect at all.
What did I do?
What didn't you do? He's trying to explain...
Margaret, I listened to everything the man said.
He was trying to explain to you the difference between a human mind and an early primate mind.
That's fine. But he keeps talking about the thing smiling, and when I get out of this tree, things are going to be different. And these are things that a human would say, wouldn't you say?
I'd say that too, yeah. What monkey going to say? I never heard a monkey say that.
Oh, you've never heard a monkey say that? Well, gee.
Well, I mean, you were saying that. No monkey would think it.
No, he was saying, listen to me. I'm sorry, Phil.
All right, that's it. I'm not going to listen to you belch and then lecture me. All right, you get to do one or the other, not both.
All right, well, then I'll take the belch.
Great, thank you, and you did.
Yeah, man.
Don't wave your hand. I had Hebrew National hot dogs.
And?
And diced onions. Big deal.
All right.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to the toilet.
All right, so, I don't know what to tell you. I'll tell you, this is my understanding of it. I wish I had another doctor here that we could talk, another scientist here. This is my understanding that we were doing fine about the whole thing. We were doing fine. We got to the whole thing about, you know, it came down out of the trees and began to compete for food, and that's what happens, you know, that's what happens. It lost its tail, didn't need the tail anymore because we're not swinging from trees anymore. And began to walk upright because we could collect things with our arms. All of those things that, you know. But no, we weren't sitting in the tree with a smile on our face thinking, man, this is going to be something. Yeah.
Joey's not saying that.
Well, that's exactly what Dr. Tarner's got me believing, or he wants us to believe. Like the monkeys up there in the tree going, when I get out of here, you know.
Well, then.
What?
He's on the phone, and I told him you were... Yeah.
Yes, Dr. Tarner.
Will you talk to... This is Randy McKinney, and Randy is a student of mine. Randy, would you please explain?
This is Randy McKinney. I wanted to... I'm a student of Dr. Tarner's, and I'm taking paleontology. And I also take a theater class. And I decided that I would create the mindset of this anthropoid. What is he thinking in the tree? And I think that'll help you.
All right.
I think the anthropoid is thinking that, man, look at all that. Yeah. What am I going to do with it? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out there, and I will do what I've always wanted to do. I'm going to lord it over all them apes. Look at all them. And he probably not use the N-word or anything. He's like, look at all them N-word, you know. And I'm going to lord it over them.
Now, what is this, a one-man show?
What's that?
What is this, a one-man show?
Yes, sir. It's called The Mind of the Anthropoid.
Yeah, it's called The Mind of the Missing Link.
Mind of the Missing Link, Mind of the Anthropoid.
And it's a wonderful one-man show here at the University of Denver, Phil, if you ever want to come and see it.
The Mind of the Anthropoid, and he's in the tree, and...
It's theater, Phil. Don't start it. Can you get off your high horse for 5 seconds and quit acting like everything is a freak show and you're the only guy sane in the room? Okay?
This area, what I'm saying is, the anthropoids of the tree, I say, man, I tell you, I get out of here, and there are going to be some changes. I get out of this tree, and I hit the floor of that desert, there are going to be changes around here. I'm going to kick his ass, kick his ass, kick his ass, kick his ass, just keep, you know, pointing. I'm going to get food. I'm going to kick ass, and I'm going to rule the roost. Now, I think that's what he thought, and I think that's what probably Dr. Tarner's trying to say, and you've taken it, and you anthropomorphized that. You know?
No, well, of course I'm anthropomorphizing it, because that's exactly what you're saying. You're giving this monkey a human form of communication.
No, he's not, Phil. He's just saying what the monkey would think. And I don't like using the word monkey, as you know.
It's not bucky.
I know it's not bunky. Oh, you going to start that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought...
I'm just trying to give you an idea as to what the thought process would be.
Well, you all you're doing is confusing it. I don't get it. I thank you, gentlemen, for trying. Thank you and good night.
So you're going to make me look like an...
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Ron Tarner. Coming back, we're going to get into a little bit of a discussion because my understanding from Matt is that vinyl albums
That is, vinyl albums that still have the promotional sticker on them are worth hundreds of dollars. And I used to have those by the tens by the tens, maybe even by the hundreds.
You had these promotional albums.
Yeah. What used to happen, as a matter of fact, you come to the radio station, and our music director would put albums in our mailboxes. We had mailboxes. And in the mailboxes were promos. In the mailboxes would be production we had to do. In the mailbox would be a new album that was out. And our music director would give each of us a copy of the new album. Let's say it was a new, I don't know. It wasn't, a lot of times it wouldn't be a well-known group, because the well-known group is going to get added, and she didn't really need, I'm thinking of Pam May when we were at K-West, she didn't need our input on how good a Rod Stewart album was, although I hated Rod Stewart, and I didn't know anybody that liked him. He was really selling a lot of records.
You hated Rod Stewart. Now I've heard it all. Now I know why you never made it as a DJ.
Why I never made it as a DJ. Anybody could make it as a DJ. Anybody. And I made it as a DJ. I got out of being a DJ. But the point I'm trying to make is, she gave us albums that were lesser known, so we would listen to those. And they always had the sticker on the front that said, for promotional use only, not for resale. And naturally, I would see these being resold at some of these used record stores I'd go to. But anyway, according to Matt, that album, if you've got an album with that promotional sticker on, it's worth $500.
What?
It's worth $500. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll talk about it here, man. And I got a couple of other things I need to alert you, y'all, to. 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. So when I was younger in the radio business, if I'd have known how much these albums are worth, Jack, I would have held on to every last one of them, because it got to the point where you had lots and lots of vinyl and you didn't know what to do with it.
You had a girlfriend collect it.
My girlfriend, yes, she collected this stuff like it was going out, which it was going out of style. And she had crates and crates and crates of vinyl. I knew people that collected a lot of it, and I'm guessing that maybe today they've made a lot of money on that stuff. But the thing about it was this. If you had, and I didn't know this, but if you had one of those albums that said this is for promotional purposes only, it apparently is worth a lot of money now. Now, people collect vinyl. I personally would not collect vinyl, and I even though I know now that it's worth a lot of money, I still would not have gone into collecting it, you know?
Well, $500 an album, Phil. You said you had a lot of those.
It doesn't make any difference. I mean, back then, if somebody would have said to me, Phil, you can make $500 an album if you will hold on to these, I would probably think, well, wait a minute, I hope to make a lot more money doing something else besides collecting, because collecting vinyl albums, in order that they not be that they don't become warped, because they would get all bent out of shape from the heat. They sound like hell if they get a scratch in them. They were just a very, very... it was a very delicate and very temperamental, you know, medium. And I just didn't want to have anything really much more to do with it other than to play it. It sounded fantastic, you know. But you know what? Tape, as soon as tape came along, I didn't so much like 8-track, but when the cassette tapes came along, I became a huge fan. When discs came along, I became a huge fan. Anything that would clean the sound up, for me, was great.
What about that guy that bought him?
What guy that bought him?
You said a guy come along and want him?
Oh, well, here's what happened. There was these guys that lived next door to me, and I think I've told this story a billion times. These guys, these cats were bikers, and they lived next door to me, and I forget what we were doing. I was talking to them one day, and they saw all this vinyl that I had.
And they stole it.
No, they didn't steal it. No, they didn't steal it. Why would you say that?
On account of your bikers.
Well, you get off that, Margaret, okay? No, they didn't steal it. They came, they saw this, and the guy said to me, what would you take in trade for that vinyl? Because I didn't want this stuff.
Well, what were some of the records you had?
Well, there was nothing there that I couldn't replace. There was nothing there that I couldn't go to the station and say, can I get another copy of this? it was a lot of stuff that was some stuff it's really well known, and some stuff that today you wouldn't know it, man. You know, I mean, I'm trying to think of we had like weird groups, man. Richard T. Bear, who the hell is he? You know,
who?
Richard T. Exactly. UK Squeeze, bands that I just. So these cats said, we have, you know, we drive trucks for a living. This my buddy drives a truck for a living, and we've got filet mignon. I said, no kidding? He goes, yeah. We'll trade you, like, we can get you, like, 30 filet mignon steaks or something for a record. I said, you're on, man. That sounded really good to me, because I just was not.
So you were not a, you did not like music, did you?
I like music, Margaret. I didn't like all these records that I wasn't going to play. A lot of them I didn't like, no. So these guys came with this side of filet mignon, like those 30 steaks. It was frozen. And I threw that in my freezer, and they took a bunch of these records off of me, probably three quarters of them, and that was fantastic.
You still want the filet mignon like?
It was great. You would cut, would just sliced off filet mignon steaks all summer long, barbecuing these things. And
so that's a pretty fair deal?
That was for me, yeah. And to this day, I have never been I've never been a freak for that stuff. I know guys that are into, wow, you know, you're in radio? Yeah, let me show you something. And they'll take you to their collection of radios. And I've never, ever cared. I've never cared. Whatever I can listen to it on is fine with me, man. It doesn't have to be.
So you're not really in love with the idea of the radio as hardware. You are more in love with,
Is this going to take a while?
Hold on for a minute. Yes, it'll take a while. You're more in love with the idea of the...
You get out of here.
All right, well, I tried.
You tried. No, I don't like any of that. So, I like to listen to music, and I like to be on the radio, but I don't care about old radios, and I don't care about turntables, stuff like that. But, so, anything that makes it... I'm a big iPod. I love that, man. I mean, I got, you know, I'm downloading music like a madman. That's my thing. You know, can you imagine? I saw a Laurel and Hardy once where they were driving down the road and they had a turntable where the radio should be. And, you know, you're watching that and you're 5 years old and you think, well, that's a pretty good idea. Well, you know, of course, no, it isn't. But I think that people thought that vinyl and the idea of a disc playing was going to last forever, man. If you think about it, it lasted. How long did it last?
Well, vinyl or the round disc, you mean?
Yeah.
That started around, let's say, the turn of the century. So it was a good 80-plus years.
80 years. 80 years, the disc, the audio disc, and let me just be very clear. 80 years, the grooved audio disc.
Yeah, it's a groove.
No, not it was a groove, man. It was a grooved audio disc, okay?
Not going to have grooves in it, man.
What? Don't worry about it. 80 years. In the time since the compact disc was introduced for commercial use, and by that I mean at the radio station, we didn't have that until the mid-80s, okay? So you're talking 85 years, and now it's been 30 years since the compact disc was introduced, and we have had one, two, three, four different kinds of medium pop up besides the disc. We've had DAT tape, and now, of course, we have digital. So, you know, I don't want to blow anybody's mind, and I realize I'm probably, you know, getting into an area of discussion that's too weird, but that is the progression of technology. It speeds up. It speeds up. The printing press took a long time before we then got into, like, computers and laser printing, and then that just boom, boom, boom. And the same thing with audio. It was like these groove discs for the longest time, and then they got 45s, but it was still basically the same thing. They changed from hard plastic to vinyl, but really, it was the same medium. And then all of a sudden comes discs, comes DAT tape, and then it's fully digital. You know?
Well, what's next? You're going to have, like, the hologram and everything.
Well, it's not going to be a hologram. Why would they need a hologram? I mean, it probably isn't going to go anywhere from here.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. Unless the... If it's digital, the player itself, the source itself, becomes like maybe something you plug into your head, you know?
Oh, will you get out of here with that, Phil?
I don't know, man. That's what I'm thinking, you know? I'm always thinking that way. I'm always thinking that, you know, the technology is going to advance to the level of...
it's going to advance to the level of it becoming a part of our genetics. You know, you'll be born with DNA for this, that, and also you'll have a biological iPod.
So we'll be robots. I get it already. I don't think I've got a little more hope for the human race than to think we're going to be walking around with an iPod shoved up our.
Anyway, thank you very much, Margaret, for that closing thought. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll see you guys tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on the West Coast, 10 p.m. on the East Coast. And PhilHenryShow.com all the time.
Phew.
What did monkey say, man?
You're not supposed to say monkey.